Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each and every week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. The author of Profit First and Clockwork, friend of Entree Architect, Mike Michalowicz, is back on the show. His new book, Fix This Next, is the manual we need right now. Whether you have a successful firm and you're preparing for the future, or your firm is struggling and you're looking for a roadmap, this is episode 340, Fix This Next, with author Mike Michalowicz. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more, all for free. Gusto, easy online payroll benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. And Monograph, the time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects. Mike Michalowicz, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, it is a joy to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. I always love having you on the show because it's always a great conversation. And you're a very popular guest. Your name and your books come up in the community all the time, at least once a week.
Profit First comes up.
Your name comes up all the time. And so you're a friend of Entree Architect and Entree Architect Podcast, whether you know it or not. But let me introduce you to the people who may not know who you are. Mike Michalowicz is the author of the books Profit First, which you probably have heard of, because if you're a community member, we talk about it all the time, Clockwork, Surge, The Pumpkin Plan, and his newest release, Fix This Next. By his 35th birthday, Mike had founded and sold two companies, one to private equity and another to a Fortune 500. So he's no stranger to business and how it works. Today, he's running a third multi-million dollar business called Profit First Professionals. Mike is a former small business columnist for the Wall Street Journal and the former business makeover specialist on MSNBC. And as I mentioned, Mike's an old friend here at Entree Architect Podcast. He's been on the show twice before. You can go back to episode 147, How to Build a Profitable Architecture Firm, where we dove deep into Profit First. So every time Profit First comes up, I share that link so you can go listen to Mike and talk about it. Talks about how Profit First works, talks about the book. And then again, he was back to talk about his book, Clockwork, where he talks about systems and sort of the next step after Profit First. What do you need to do? That was episode 241. So Mike, we're going to talk about another topic that is so critical to small business, especially small firm architects. This is going to be a very popular episode because this is a critical subject that I think is going to resonate with our community, whether they know it or not. I think it's going to be a very important one. Before we jump into that conversation, you shared your origin story twice before. So go back to those episodes if you want to hear Mike's story, where he sort of grew into what he is today and his passion for what he does today. Go back. I actually encourage you to go back and listen to those episodes. But Mike, give us a little bit of background on who you are, just for some context, and then sort of the history of why you wrote this book, and then we'll talk about what's in the book.
Yeah, so it takes me about 5 years to write a book, Mark. So I emailed my list about 5 years ago asking them what their biggest challenge is, because once I get a sense for what my community needs, and if I have an interest in that subject too, that's a book I want to write. So I emailed my list, and I'm not the most technically savvy guy, so I guess I triple clicked or something, but I sent the same email out multiple times on the same day. And the question simply was, what's the biggest challenge you're facing in the year ahead? And in certain instances, the same people, the same person answered the same question multiple times that day with different answers. So some guy said, like, I remember he emailed and he said, we have a sales problem. It's our sales system that's broken. Then in the afternoon said, we need to hire new people. It's our hiring process. And in the evening, it was vision and communication. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is very clear. The biggest challenge business owners have is knowing what their biggest challenge is.
Right.
That became the inception of this book, is most entrepreneurs don't know what to do. So the one most important thing for the business, so they do everything. They're constantly putting out fires. How do we move this business forward? How do we identify the true one thing our business needs?
Right. The biggest problem for us as small business owners is always the problem that's right in front of us right now.
Right.
That's right. In our minds, we think the most important thing right now. This is urgent. I need to fix it. But usually you spend your entire life fixing those problems.
But you know, there's a psychological reason why we do that. All these apparent issues that present themselves, we address them and we get immediate relief. So if I respond to that, you know, the email is not unstopping. So I'm just going to start doing email. Every time I respond, it's like, okay, I got a little thing done here. So we feel this relief. Mm-hmm. An employee comes with a question that they really should be able to answer on their own, but we answer it for them. And even though we're frustrated that they couldn't figure it out, we feel relief. Hey, right. We gave them the answer again. So what we're trading is these constant stream of momentary relief for the consequence of long-term agony. That's the problem.
Yeah. And that relief isn't just psychological, it's chemical, right?
It's chemicals. There's a dopamine.
When you do that, you get a little shot of dopamine. It physically feels good that you've solved the problem. I feel that every time I help somebody or answer a question, I actually feel that feeling, which makes me want to do more of it, which is sort of the fuel for Entree Architect, truthfully. But that's not necessarily a good thing, right? Because if we are constantly trying to solve the problems right before us, we're sort of struggling on our longer term, bigger picture all the time.
Oh, in a massive way, because the business will only perform to the level of the entrepreneur's energy and availability. You know, it's funny, this is a referral back to Clockwork, but as I was writing that book, this problem of putting out or addressing just the immediate and apparent issues and prioritizing them over the important ones is not just a modern phenomenon, it's always been a phenomenon. And there was even a statue dedicated to the necessity to concentrate more, to think more, and to be more contemplative. It's the statue of the thinker. So there's a guy that's you know, there's a statue dedicated to the most important function we can do. Entrepreneurs need to spend way less time doing and a lot more time thinking. And the question is, well, how do I do that?
Right.
You just do it. It's the way out of the weeds is sometimes just to walk out of the weeds. Just block out time to think. And sadly, for many owners now, it's really just a 5-minute or 10-minute shower in the morning where the only thinking is being done now. That's where the ideas bubble up, like, oh, we could also do this. Well, can you imagine if we dedicated an hour or two a day to that, how much impact that'd have on our business?
Yeah. And I think many of us don't do that. Well, I know most of us don't do this, which is why we often feel like it's a constant struggle, like every day. Especially for architects, you become an architect because you love architecture. You love to be creative. You want to be an architect. And then you find yourself a business person, right? You find yourself an entrepreneur, and you didn't realize you were doing that when you launched your business. And then it's this constant struggle, and it's this constant fire, you know, that you're putting out every day. And it becomes mundane and frustrating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the greatest day of entrepreneurship is the day before you start your business.
Exactly.
The vision's so grand, you know. Yeah. And then the worst day is the next morning when you realize, oh my gosh, I have to make this work now.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
So with Fix This Next, what it, that came from those emails.
Yeah.
And it, you sort of feel like when you find yourself doing that, where you find yourself constantly struggling, you find yourself in this survival mode where you're just constantly trying to just keep your head above water. Is that sort of where we start with this? That this is where you're sort of in a moment of entrepreneurial,
overwhelm
and mud, yeah, that it's just this thing that's bearing down on us, and I'm just trying to keep this thing going so I can. And now, in this time that we're living in now, with this crisis and the economy, you know, this thing that right now it seems like the economy's okay. But you know that it's going to start slowing down. You know that there's this tsunami coming in terms of an economic slowdown. It's yeah, constant. This is a very timely book. So where do we go? How do we prepare for this?
Yeah. So what I did in the book is I opened up with this concept called the survival trap. And I think it's a good illustration of why we don't move forward. And so you can do it in your head, or if you have a piece of paper, it's even more effective. But if you do it in your head, there's three steps. Is you draw the letter A in the center of a piece of paper and put a circle around it. And what A represents is where our business is right now. And for many businesses, particularly now, it's crisis or challenge. But you know, what's your business facing in this moment? Then as the second step, we draw arrows. And I suggest three, maybe four arrows in any direction you choose away from A. They can all be in the same direction. They can be in different directions. But you draw arrows away from A. And what those arrows illustrate is actions or decisions we can make to escape crisis, to get out of the problem. Very similar to what we're talking about, that dopamine response. If I simply respond to this email, I'll feel better. That's an example. So there's these different choices you can make. Then as a third and final step, I tell people draw the letter B in the bottom right corner of that piece of paper and put a circle around it. What B represents is what your business needs from you next. But if we look at those arrows, chances are none of the arrows or very few of the arrows pointed to B. And so we drew these arrows out, but they didn't go to B. And the question is why? And it's very obvious. We didn't know where B was going to be. We don't know where B was. So how can we draw arrows toward it? And that illustrates the problem. We don't evaluate what the business actually needs, B. We simply evaluate what's going on in the business now. And we constantly escape it. Well, what happens with those arrows out, whatever pathway you choose, you simply end up in the new point A, the next crisis or struggle. So you draw arrows out and you end up in A. And that's why businesses, this illustrates that kind of circuitous pattern we go through. So what I teach in Fix This Next is a way to simply identify B, the thing your business needs from you, and then we can make decisions consistent with it. But there's one other element of the survival trap, which is actually the most dangerous, is when I do this, I sometimes do live events and I'll ask people, I'm doing over virtual formats now, but I'll ask people how many arrows drew toward B. And some people, braggadociously say, well, I got 2 arrows toward B or 1. And they feel so accomplished. And I said, actually, that's the most dangerous situation because you didn't know where B was, but you happened to draw an arrow toward B. Happenstance happens. This is how the scenario is, how it plays out in our business. We feel every day like business is not working. We're putting out fires and we're trying to fix things. And every day is putting out fires. But then one day, all of a sudden, things do start clicking. So I'm marching forward. It's like, oh my gosh, today is the day I always envisioned. I knew my business would get here one day. We're crushing it. I got this figured out. And then the next day you return to the office and it's a shitstorm again. It all falls apart. Why do we have those magical days rarely? But why do they happen? That's when we drew an arrow toward B without knowing where B is.
Right.
We took an action that the business actually needed and started clicking. But because we didn't know where the business really needed to be, we just happened to do it. We end up in a new A. Then we try to escape A and we start this pattern again of being in a circuitous, stucky or sticky situation.
Yeah. And I can imagine right now listeners are nodding their head. Yep.
Yeah.
I've been there. I'm there now. Right. And,
yeah,
and we've all had those days where it's struggle, it's struggle, it's struggle. And then you have this great day, right? The sun,
yeah,
is shining and the client called and you got this pay, you got this bill paid and you have money in the bank and everything's
right,
feeling good. And you get this giant hit of dopamine and it's just a wonderful day. And then the next day comes in and it's just like all those others. And,
yeah,
and you just happen to stumble upon that great day.
Yeah.
But you never really planned for it.
It's so frustrating when that great day happens, but you can't capture it. It seems so fleeting.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing I found is it's not fleeting. It can be developed. But the transition to it is not like, it's not like you're, one day the business will click and then the next day it'll click and it's going to be perfect. It's a transition period. There's going to be still bumps and bruises. But if we know where that B is, what the business needs, and we move toward it, and once we solve that B, then we identify C, move toward C, then our business will start having those great days with some consistency.
So how do we know what B is and how do we know where it's going to be?
Yeah, perfect question. So we use what's called the business hierarchy of needs. This is something I translated from Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and there's one great distinction. So just a quick history lesson. Maslow, he's studying human behavior. He identifies for all of humanity, we have physiological needs. Like Mark, you and I, we need to breathe air, drink water, eat food. You know, that's our core survival is based upon that. Once that's adequately satisfied, we then move to higher level needs like safety needs, protection from harm. And he goes all the way up to this thing called self-actualization, living life's purpose. And what Maslow argued, if any time a base level need is being compromised, not satisfied, we'll revert to that base level need. So a more base level need is safety. If you and I were at a conference or something together, Mark, and we're like, hey, let's take a shortcut back to the hotel from this event. And we cut down a dark alley and we get the sense like, this doesn't feel right. You know, we better turn around and walk out because it isn't right. That is our gut instinct. And in Maslow's hierarchy, it works very effectively because we are neurologically wired into ourselves. You know, sight, smell, hearing, those senses trigger off an instinctual gut feel and we should act upon it. Well, I translated Maslow's hierarchy to the business hierarchy of needs. Foundationally, every business needs sales. That's the same as breathing air. You have no inbound cash, you're done. So we need sales and it continues to go up and I'll explain them. But the great difference between Maslow's hierarchy and the business hierarchy is we are not neurologically wired into our business, yet we think we are. And we trust our gut. We're like, I can feel those Facebook ads are going to work for us. Or, you know, no, it's hiring that rainmaker. You know, oh, no, this is what it is. So we try to trust our gut, but we're not neurologically wired into our business. So we need actually empirical data. We need information that supports our assumptions or doesn't. And so the five level needs are as follows. And they are a hierarchy, just like Maslow. Foundationally, you need sales. That's the first level. Sales is the creation of cash for an organization. No sales, no organization. But sales simply needs to be adequate to support the next level, which is profit. Profit is the creation of stability for an organization. You know, just like if sales was equal to oxygen, you can only breathe so much. There's a certain point, if you try to breathe in more, you're not going to get healthier. In fact, there's a certain point where you'll start getting dizzy and it can compromise you. You over-oxygenate. Well, you can actually have too many sales. There's some people that say, oh, sales cures everything. That is total line of bull. It does not. Sales creates oxygen for a business, but we need to be able to capture that oxygen. That's what profit does. That's the absorption of oxygen. And you see, particularly in this economy right now, businesses that weren't focused are concerned with profit. As I think it was Warren Buffett said, as the tide goes out, you see who's been swimming naked. You know, as the recession does what it does, you see businesses that didn't concern themselves with profitability and are done. Once profit is adequately satisfied, the next level need is called order. Order is the creation of efficiency, organizational efficiency. It's that point where there's no dependency on the owner themselves. The owner is relevant as they serve a function, but there's no dependency on the owner. Once order is satisfied,
the systems come in.
Exactly, systems. Yep. Exactly, systems are a major component of this. There's a thing called role alignment, where the people, the resources of your organization are maximized in what functions they serve. They call it role alignment. The next level above that is called impact. Impact is the creation of transformation. This is where businesses are not in the business of transactions. They're in the business of having those transactions shift people's lives, transformative. The highest level is legacy. Legacy is where is the creation of permanence. And this is where business owners have a realization. I have not achieved a legacy status, but as I was interviewing people, it was very interesting. These business owners said, when I achieved legacy in my business, when I was focusing on that, I had a realization. I was never a business owner. I thought I was. I've always been a business steward, meaning my responsibility was to bring life to this entity. But it's now about the continuance of this organization, the entity itself, and my involvement is secondary to that. It's not important. It's that this must continue. And what I want to share about this business hierarchy of needs is all these elements will play out in a business to some degree at some point. Just like in Maslow's hierarchy, you and I are breathing right now. We don't have to think about it. It happens. It's automatic. So all these elements in a business are present at all times. The question is, what do we need to fix next? What needs the improvement next? And it can only ever be one thing. And only one thing can be the most important thing. So we have to identify it. And you identify it by starting at the base, saying, do we have adequate sales to support profit? If not, we have a sales issue. If so, do we have adequate profit to support order? If not, we have a profit issue. We keep moving through this. This also, it's not like a ladder. It's not like you climb to the top, Mark, and you wave to your friends and say, I made it to the top. You'll ping pong around.
Yeah, I was thinking
the mighty Amazon, with the COVID crisis, went right back to sales. They were focusing on impact and legacy. They moved right back to focus on sales, and they said, oh my gosh, we got to reprioritize how we sell totally. We're going to concentrate on priority items, essential items, and we're going to stop selling or reducing the shipments of certain things, like, sadly, books, because I was affected by that. But they reorganized. So all businesses move around this chart, this business hierarchy of needs, to like a ping pong as opposed to a ladder.
Yeah, as you were mentioning that, I was thinking about our community of architects. Many of us sort of live within the sales world, trying to get the next job. Sadly, many of us aren't focused on profit at all, although that's starting to shift because we focus on it here at Entree Architect a lot. And order is something that many of us realize we need to do, and so we're putting those systems in place, and we're hoping that's going to solve some of the problems of profit and sales. So we sort of bounce back and forth between order and sales. Hopefully there'll be some profit that comes along with that, right? And that's because that's the way we're thinking. Very rarely do we get to the point of transformation, although that's where we really want to be. When we became architects, that's what we wanted to live in transformation. Yes. That's why we became architects. And some of us, you know, if we're really good and we've built all the other things, that maybe there is a legacy, right? Maybe there is something that lasts beyond us, and we want to get to the point where our business is living beyond us. We will return to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect: Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Unless you're working for one of the top architecture firms in the world, you know what it's like to work with limited resources. But there's one resource that you can access no matter what size your architecture firm: Arcat.com. Arcat is the online solution for your building product information needs. They offer BIM objects, CAD details, specifications, and much, much more from leading manufacturers from all over the world. Research building products and get the information you need all in the same place, fast and easy. And best of all, it's free. Arcat doesn't charge you anything for these resources. You don't even need to register or give them your email. And when I say it's free, there's no catch. Visit Arcat.com and try it out. Search for the resources that you need, and Arcat will deliver. That's Arcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. Arcat.com. Build better. Taking care of your employees has never been more important than now. For years, Gusto's been helping more than 100,000 small business owners run payroll, offer benefits, onboard new employees, and more. They call it the People Platform. And it doesn't just look nice, and it does look nice. It also works. Your payroll taxes are filed, deductions are calculated, and your team gets paid. You can even offer health insurance and 401ks as you grow. As a listener of the Entree Architect podcast, you will get 3 months free after your first payroll when you go to entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's entrearchitect.com/gusto. And make sure that you let them know that you're a member of the Entree Architect community. Gusto, the People Platform. Visit entrearchitect.com/gusto today. Are you tired of spreadsheets? Of using spreadsheets to keep track of your project plans, your budgets, your staff, your time? Spreadsheets. Our friends at Monograph know what that's like because they're architects too. They know all about that spreadsheet mess that you're dealing with. So they did something about it. Monograph is a time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects to respond to the challenges that small and medium-sized firms face on their quest to a profitable business. With Monograph's integrated suites of tools, you'll stay on track and on budget without the overhead of wrangling spreadsheets every day. Improve your firm's operations today. Try Monograph for free at entrearchitect.com/monograph. Ditch the spreadsheets. Visit entrearchitect.com/monograph and try Monograph today for free. Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. I find myself with Entree Architect, you know, bouncing around too. You know, legacy is very important to me. I built Entree Architect from the beginning to be something that grows beyond me. But I still have to sort of bounce back and forth among all these other things. And clearly I'm not anywhere near legacy yet.
And it can't be achieved without you doing the other elements for any of us. I call it the get and give stage. My mother used to say to me, Mike, you have to give to get. And I'm going to call bullshit on that. It's actually the reverse, Mom. We get to give. And what I mean by this is we need to get sales into our organization. We need to get profit and get order throughout our organization in order to give an impact and to give legacy. So I see some businesses, actually, particularly in this crisis now, saying, you know what, we're just going to skip those base levels. Screw them. Let's just serve our community. Because if we just care for people, things will sort themselves
out. Everything else will fall into place.
And it doesn't. There's businesses here that are caring for the community. They're giving away their services, and they now shutter their doors. I think that's actually the ultimate sin. They were wonderful for the community for 2 or 3 weeks, and they can never serve the community again because they didn't put the oxygen mask on themselves. We have an obligation to sell. We have an obligation to be profitable. It's the only way you can be sustainable. We have an obligation to bring about efficiency because it's the only way we can be of greater service when the routine stuff can be done and you can move on to your talent, which is where the transformation happens. And I look at one example I use in the book in Fix This Next. I talk about Harley Davidson. Harley Davidson has a transformational product. Now, the funny thing is I've never driven a motorcycle, but presumably you can buy a motorcycle anywhere. There's many providers of it. But there's special meaning when you buy a Harley Davidson. You become part of a community. You're a weekend warrior. You got a hog now. You may throw the tattoo on your shoulder. But that means something, and that's transformative because you belong to something. And so transformation can present itself in many ways, but inevitably there's a shift in people's lives. From that moment forward, there's an identity change, or they say, wow, my life will never be the same. This was meant for me. My life has been saved. Some of those emotions will come about. And the funny thing is, I would argue you, myself, we collectively are much closer to those elements than we think. But the reason we often don't achieve legacy or have transformation consistently is because we're trying to leap to it as opposed to addressing the fundamental elements of sales, profits, and order first.
We've never built the foundation.
That's right. Right. We're putting the fifth floor in thin air, and we keep wondering why it collapses to the ground.
Right.
We need that basement structure first.
I have a mantra that I've been saying for years at Entree Architect is profit, then art. Because architects so often are focused on the art, that's all they want to do is they want to create beautiful architecture. And then they think that if they create beautiful architecture and they become this icon of architecture, then the profit will come. But my argument, and clearly your argument, is profit first and then the art comes, because then the profit will allow you to create the order that you need in order to establish a firm that will allow you to be that artist that you always wanted to be.
That's right. Yeah, people, and I get it, because I thought it was the same thing. Like, do something magnificent and the world will, you know, build it and they will come type of thing. The thing is, building and they will come, it requires effort and resources to actually do that. And so we deplete the only few resources we had trying to get there. So we often can't achieve the outcome we want. So these are partially completed projects, either physically or at least emotionally. The second thing is, if you build it, they won't come. I've built a lot of books that people didn't come to. It's doing it again and again in a new flavor. And then one of them is the one that gets noticed. So Profit First was not my first book. It was my second or third. I think it was my fourth book that really hit. But I would have never gotten there unless I sustained myself. The other thing is, and I think this is actually the most important part, the reason we have an obligation to sell and be profitable is because actually that's what clients want. Now, a client will never say, hey, can you charge me more? Can you rip me off a little bit? I really appreciate that. but what customers do say is, I want this to be an important critical project for you serving me. I don't want you distracted or deluded worrying about other people. I want your full attention. Well, the only way to give something our full attention is if it provides sustainability. if we're doing something and it doesn't provide for us, we have to look elsewhere, and we can't do the best in, for that client. So clients want us to be profitable. They want us to sell to them. And that's why we have an obligation to do it.
Yeah. And they respect you more, right? If they know that you're not making any money and that you're struggling as a business, you know, they're not going to really respect you as an architect.
Yeah. Yeah. People become as vested in the outcome as they have invested in the product or service. So if you give something away, it's insignificant. It's cheap. Like if I put a diamond in front of you and put it on the table and said, "Hey, Mark, be careful with that. It costs me $5. You're like, cubic zirconia. Thanks. Okay, whatever, Mike. If I put it down and say, "Hey, Mark, be careful with that. That costs $5,000. Now you're like, "Oh, this is the real McCoy. You may hold little tweezers to pick it up and put it in a safe." The way we respond to something that looks, feels, and is could be identical, price becomes a judgment very quickly of its value. So if you don't charge effectively, if you don't charge appropriately, you're not going to be judged appropriately or effective. You're going to be considered, you know, just a cheap zirconia, cubic zirconia.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a soundbite that I am going to share throughout the community, because that is something that architects need to hear. Yeah. So once we have this hierarchy, this business hierarchy
of needs,
And so it's sales, profit, order, impact, legacy. That's the hierarchy. So now once we understand that and we know that we need to sort of start with the sales, which leads to the profit, which leads to order, legacy, then what? Because now we know that there's this hierarchy. How do we identify the B in the corner of the page by using this hierarchy?
Yeah. So within the hierarchy, I have actually 25 core needs. What I found is if you peel back the skin of a business, it's all identical, similar to humanity. Like if you and I were standing next to each other right now, Mark, people could look at us and say, "Oh, they're different." And you know, we judge on skin color, height, gender, all these different elements, the outside factors. But if we peel back the skin, we're basically identical. We are identical. The biology is identical. I don't go to the doctor if I'm having, you know, a heart attack, and the doctor doesn't say, "Before we get started, where do you keep your heart? Is it in your foot, Mike?" You know, it's always in the same spot. We know where to go. Well, the biology of business I found to be identical. So you could have a pizza shop or an architectural firm or an accounting shop, or you could be a manufacturer. Essentially, we are the same if you peel back the skin. So there's 25 elements that make up the DNA of business. And so within each hierarchy, there's 5 elements. Once you pinpoint this, and you just go through a series of questions, just yes, no questions, and pinpoint where you are. So maybe let's say you actually have a profit problem. You're over leveraged. You have too much debt. Then we say, how are we going to resolve this? And so there's a framework to do it that I call OMEN that I write about and Fix This Next. OMEN is an acronym that stands for, once you identify what, the B, one of these 25 elements, how to go about resolving it. And there's 2 components of OMEN that I think most people understand and even do. And there's 2 components that people miss out on completely. And that's why they fail when they set goals. So here's what OMEN stands for. O is set the objective. So if I identify I have too much debt, the objective may be to eradicate debt, right? So that's a simple objective. Then M stands for measurements. How do I know I'm achieving my objective? Well, if our debt goes to zero and on a weekly basis, I can see it decreasing by 5% or whatever until we get to zero at the end of the year, I know I'm on the pathway. And there may be some other measurements too. It's the other 2 elements that people mess up on. So E stands for evaluation frequency. The idea here is, how often are we going to check in on our progress? Sadly, most small businesses, and particularly people with creative styles like architects, are in the set it and forget it mode. Like, okay, we got to get rid of the debt. Good. Next thing. And they forget. So they set the goal and then they never address it. And at the end of the year or next time it comes to their mind, they're like, "Oh my gosh, that didn't work out." And they say the system failed. But no, we didn't have some check-in, some periodic evaluation. So we have to check in regularly. And we just check in a time on a frequency that's appropriate. So maybe when it comes to debt eradication, maybe once a month, because you're paying your bills once a month, maybe that's the time to check in. You know, checking in every second would be absurd, and checking in once every 10 years is absurd. So you got to find that sweet spot. But understand, it's all based upon the circumstances of your business. Amazon does check their debt leveraging every second because there's so much cash flow going on there. They have to check more regularly. So just as a comparison.
Yep.
The last element is N. It stands for nurture. Nurture is simply giving ourselves the flexibility and perhaps even assembling a team of people to observe what metrics we've set, what measurements we've set, the objective, and checking in frequently, and say, is this still right? Most businesses say, you know what, we got to have $1 million in sales or whatever the number is. They don't achieve it. They're like, damn it, we failed. Or they surpassed and said, we were successful. But it's either true. We don't know. Because the data we observed when we set that $1 million may be different data than we observe today. So we constantly got to look and say, you know what, we set a $1 million goal, but due to, you know, there was an earthquake in our local facility or vicinity, and people need to build new houses and new structures, we should expect not $1 million in sales, but $3 million in sales because there's more need for us. So nurture is checking in and allowing ourselves, actually expecting of ourselves to tweak or modify the goals, the measurements, the objectives, the measurements, and the nurturing or evaluation frequency.
And maybe even determine whether it's even necessary anymore.
Yeah, right. Sometimes it's like, oh, that's not necessary anymore.
Because one of those things may be a goal that's really important. You've established the objective, you measured it, you've evaluated it, and then over time, it's no longer as important as it was. Like there would be certain objectives as a startup that are no longer really relevant as a more established architecture firm.
That's 100% correct.
And if you're just doing it because you've established it when you were a startup, and you're still doing it 10 years later, and you're just wasting your time. It's not necessary anymore.
Yeah, that's the trap of, well, that's the way we've always done it, right? Yeah. That's the biggest trap that exists. We just do it because of its historical significance, not because of its relevance.
Yeah, which is why that evaluation and that nurture step is so important. So we can really focus on the next thing, the thing that's most important, because you'll make room for the things that you really do need.
Yeah, and this is something we have to calendar. I found the ultimate task management system has been in front of us for eons. It's a calendar. You know, I did the task list, the Pomodoro method. I got bells, strings. None of that stuff works as much as a calendar. If it's in the calendar and scheduled, it needs to be done. And now the time is allocated to do it. So this nurturing and the evaluation frequency, we got a calendar. If we're going to check in every week, there's going to be a block of time. It's not like, oh, we'll check in every week and it's not allocated. We allocate the time to check in. And then we question ourselves. That's what the nurturing process is. What's working? What's not working? Amplify what's working. Remove what's not working.
If it's not time blocked on your calendar, those fires will fill in those gaps and you won't do the things that you need to do.
That's correct. It's 100%.
So you can go through this whole process, and if you don't find the time and put it on your calendar to do the things you need to do, the process is a waste of time. Don't even start.
One little hack I found for myself is I usually used to look about a week or two down the calendar. It's like, gosh, I'm so booked up. I don't have time for this. But I do have time. I can make time for it. And what I mean by that is if I look out 5 years from now, it's usually a pretty blank calendar. Right. Is this so significant that 5 years from now it may have to happen? If yes, okay, I can start calendaring 5 years out. And I start rewinding. I usually find, at least from my schedule, usually about a month and a half out, things start opening up and I can book it. So book, if you can't address it now, I appreciate that. You still have to book it, even if it has to wait a month and a half. But if you don't book it now, you're always going to be looking 2 weeks out and you'll never find the space.
Yeah. And those time slots, you need to make them sacred. They need to be just as important as your best client's appointment.
Yeah.
Because that's how you're building your business. Because very often we'll put those blocks in our calendar and I'm going to do that every week. And sometimes you do it. And sometimes you have a client that wants to meet at that time. And so you just say, oh, I'll just skip that. That's just my meeting. And then you don't do it.
Exactly. And so one way to do this is accountability to someone else. It doesn't need to be an employee or a colleague. It can be another firm of any business and say, listen, every Friday from 2 to 4, we sit down and we're going to discuss how we're progressing on our goals and so forth. And now when you commit to someone else, it happens. I did this for myself. I was actually braggadocious for a period about workaholism. I thought that was the best thing to have until I realized that it's the worst thing to have. It's a workaholic means a non-productive aholic. It means I can just work harder as opposed to work smarter. So what I did was I go to a chiropractic doctor regularly, not because I have any problems, because I don't want problems. And so I'd schedule my chiropractic appointment at 5 o'clock. So I had to leave here at the office at 4:30. And now because I had a commitment to someone else, I had to wrap up by 4:30, and it was unbelievable how productive I became because now I had this compression of time and a commitment to someone else.
Yeah. So important. You know, Mike, I love having you on the show. I love
being on your show.
Because you're so practical, right? You make it so easy to understand, and it's so important. You take the most important things in business And you make them so easy to understand and give us the steps to do it. And so the Fix This Next is the name of the book. You should definitely go buy the book, but you should go check out all the other books that Mike has written, because they're all like that. They're all practical steps to solve a specific problem in business. And he's talking to us, small business, us. And so I highly recommend those all the books. And this has been a fantastic episode of the podcast, Mike, because this is another podcast that I'll be able to share. When somebody asks a question in the community, I could say, just go listen to this. Just go do that. I don't even need to explain it. Just go listen to this, because this is your problem.
I love hearing that.
And so it's great to have you here. Before we wrap things up, Mike, I want to ask you the question. I've asked you twice before this question. I want to ask you again, because anytime people come on, it's always another answer. What is the one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think starting a not to-do list. Because the whole situation here is we need to find the one thing you can do is find the one thing. Question is, how do I find that one thing? And we overwhelm ourselves. I remember my sister telling me this story. I don't know if she experienced this or this is just kind of mythology, but she was in college and the professor puts the jug on the table and he has sand, he has rocks and stones. Have you heard that story?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And he just poured sand into the jug and he said, those are all the small problems. And he goes, if you focus on the small problems first, you'll have nothing left. And he did the reverse. We put the big rocks in, small rocks, and he's able to fill up the entire thing. You know, we got to find out what that big rock is. And it starts off by saying, I'm not going to take on sand. So we all have a to-do list. I challenge everyone listening in to start a not to-do list. Here's things I won't do anymore. And when they come up and present themselves, how loyal are you to yourself? Don't do it. Assign it to someone else. Get rid of it. And some of these things, just let them vapor, fade into the vapor.
Yeah, we just recently had an episode where we talked about delegation, and the first step in delegation is to eliminate, right?
Yes.
You eliminate anything that isn't really important, and then you automate as much as you can that's left. Then you delegate everything else, and then that's what's left of the thing that you should be doing as an architect and as a business owner.
I love that. That's exactly, I concur 100%.
His name is Mike Michalowicz. Don't even worry about how to spell it. It's going to be in the show notes. FixThisNext.com is the website where you can learn all about the book. You can buy the book there. I am definitely going to buy this book. To be honest, I haven't read the book yet. It is definitely going to be read, especially after this conversation. This is something that we need here at Entree Architect as well. Mike's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. He's active on all of those. You can tweet him and he'll respond. And a great podcast, Entrepreneurship Elevated. If you're looking for a podcast that features Mike, because you heard him here. He is a great character, a great speaker. It's very entertaining, and you learn in every episode. Entrepreneurship Elevated is a podcast that you should subscribe to. Mike, as always, this has been a great conversation. I look forward to the next one, and I appreciate you for being here at Entree Architect Podcast.
I appreciate you, brother. Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to Mike Michalowicz. This is episode 340. You know the drill. EntreeArchitect.com/episode340. Share that link with one friend and they will thank you. Maybe it's somebody who's struggling and doesn't really know why they're struggling, trying to figure it out. This is the episode that will help. Maybe it's somebody who doesn't know about Mike. Which is probably unlikely, but who knows? Maybe there's somebody out there who may not know who Mike Michalowicz is. Introduce them to Mike Michalowicz and his books, and they will forever thank you. EntreeArchitect.com/episode340. Registration is open. Registration for the Build Your Brand workshop is now open. Jeff Eccles and I are going all in this year. As Mike mentioned in this episode, if you don't have sales, you don't have the foundation you need to build your success. And sales comes from building an effective marketing system and a powerful differentiating brand. Your architecture firm's success starts with the story you tell. Register now for the Build Your Brand workshop. Visit EntreeArchitect.com/buildyourbrand. That's EntreeArchitect.com/buildyourbrand for all the details. Go there now. Be well, my friends. Be healthy, be happy, safe and secure. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.